You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts. AI is the hottest thing at the moment, but what does it mean for our industry? Aurelie Quaid is a soil carbon consultant working in the ag sector with an interest in the latest technology. In this episode, we discuss how artificial intelligence technology can benefit specifically the production sector of the horticulture industry, as well as some of the risks of relying too heavily on AI. We don't mention brand names except for OpenAI's ChatGPT, but we do give you a good overview of what's already possible today. We even make it the whole way through the interview without mentioning the Terminator films once. G'day, Aurelie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me tonight.
It's going to be fun. So, Aurelie, can you briefly tell us about what you do for work?
All right. So, I worked in plant pathology. I'm a researcher. And I have just recently joined a company called Australian Soil Management, for which I consult. And we are helping farmers improve their soil health in terms of their organic carbon content, because there is a very strong link with the amount of carbon present in the soil and how productive that soil is. And on top of that, when farmers are really keen to get work on their soil carbon, that often leads to them signing up to a program to be able to have Australian Carbon Credit Units, or ACCUs is their acronyms.
And so what's led you to become interested in AI and, you know, technology and how it can help growers?
I think the positive side of AI for me is how it can help us achieve our sustainability goals. We all have to be very mindful that only 1% of the water in the whole world is actually drinkable. By 2050, we have a world population predicted to reach 9.7 billion people, and AI is going to become absolutely critical to maximize the land use and also help us reach our sustainability targets. So we don't consider the soil to be dirt anymore, but every inches of land we have can produce as much as it can, and doing that in the long term.
Right. Okay. So AI is going to help us to reach those sustainability goals. So what is AI? Like, when we talk about artificial intelligence, what does that term actually mean?
I think is that we now have machines that can perform tasks that used to require the human brain to perform those tasks. And now our technology and predictive analysis, we have machines having not thoughts, but having the ability to perform those tasks.
Absolutely. So it's like a simulation of human intelligence. It goes beyond just a machine that can do a simple task, doesn't it?
It does. There are certain things that it performs much better than human. You've mentioned storage and the machines that are able to detect particular gas in those storage chamber. Or the machine that can detect which crop contains more chlorophyll than other crop. Human eye can do that to a certain extent, but the machine can give you a more precise score of those plots, for instance.
What are some of the reasons that people avoid some of these new technologies, especially AI?
Yeah, so I think there's several reasons. The main reason to learning anything new, I believe, and not just AI for most people, and that's human nature, is that when we're learning something new, there's a learning curve. And the beginning of any learning curve is that it hurts and your brain is telling you that it doesn't want to do it. And so often we give up and we tend to stick to things we already know or we're proficient and good at. So I think that's the main reason. The second reason is that it could be a cost in terms of how much time we can invest in learning that new technology and how much is that new technology going to cost us. So also, particularly for AI, when they first come out in the market or where there's a new technology that comes out, it's often quite complex. And it takes a bit of time for that technology to be democratized and become A, cheaper, and B, better, and in terms of being easier to use.
So as you said, there's a steep learning curve. And even though in the long run, technology may help our business become, you know, more efficient, more sustainable, and on, it's going to take a while for us to learn that new technology. So there's an upfront cost. And as well, you have to find the right technology too, because sometimes you can spend all this time learning a new technology only to realize that it's actually the wrong technology for your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you've got to, that's right. So it's not just a time to learn the new technology. There's a time involved in researching what technology is going to be appropriate for you.
Totally. So what are some of the reasons that people opt in to try new technology then? So like, why would somebody listening right now, what are some of the reasons and the benefits that they can get from incorporating AI into their business?
Cost saving. Cost saving are a huge thing. A lot of those new AI technology make life so much easier. They can save you traveling hundreds of thousands of kilometers. I've just back from a conference on the Gold Coast, and one of the key speakers is heavily invested in satellite imaging, and he can now remotely from his computer have a look at a farm or a production system, identify area within that production system that there are differences in the imaging that pinpoints or shows that some parts of that production system are not as productive as they should be compared to other area. And so he can send those maps and the farmer can precisely apply nutrients or pesticides to those areas without someone having to travel to see that person.
And that's monitored in real time.
Absolutely. I think some of those satellites take images every 10 minutes.
Yeah, wow, that's huge. So you can pick up straight away, as soon as there starts to become a difference between two plants, that difference is picked up. A soil scientist can come in and test the soil, or maybe there's a pest present there and you've just noticed that pest outbreak at the beginning of it, and so it's going to be much easier to treat that problem.
Absolutely. And as you can imagine, if you tackle those issues early, there's also often a big benefit with AI in terms of safety, as you're going to apply less chemicals. You can then maybe get drones now to apply chemicals. And so you remove human from having to be in contact with those pesticides and herbicides.
So is there anything else that you can talk about with regards to that satellite imaging?
Yes, there's now also forensic imaging, where a farmer had gypsum delivered to his property and he thought that that pile of gypsum was a bit smaller, asked the person to do some imaging. And so the driver did deliver the gypsum, but in between the farmer noticing the difference in delivery, someone had come along and taken quite a big chunk of that pile of gypsum.
Okay, forensic imaging. So that means that you can track who's coming up to your property, what's happening on the site.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Or misapplication. That's right.
That's very cool. And misapplication. Yeah, I can imagine so many applications for that, especially when you've got the one site, if you're in production nursery. Is there anything that satellite imagery could do for someone who's like in the landscaping game, where there may be sort of multiple properties that they're working on?
Absolutely. There's no reason why they can't, particularly for larger project or park and garden, or even trying to link corridors for wildlife, where you could then put a project together, have a look at the imaging, and decide of the best corridor or the best design that could also take into account long-term visions and not just be limited to the next 5, 10, 25 years.
Mm. I know I on LinkedIn I'm connected with quite a few people who are in council, parks and gardens, and one of the things that they really struggle with is graffiti. Do you think that this satellite imagery, like, I mean, what's the line there? I guess I could help people report it to the police, right?
Yes, you could. You could often, I find, with that sort of issues that we focus on the graffiti problem, and sometimes I like to take a step back and say, well, why do we have an issue with young people and graffiti?
Right.
In that case, can AI, that's probably the limitation of AI. AI can offer extra surveillance. AI could find the offender. AI could do all of that. But AI cannot prevent the problem from occurring in the first place.
Mm. Yeah, well said. And, you know, I guess as a private person, it's up to you to decide what you do. Like, do you just take that to the police straight away, or do you know who it is? Is it someone who's part of the community and you can go and have a chat with them?
That's right. Do young kids need more outlets where they're allowed and encouraged to do graffiti?
Mm. That is one thing that I've heard too, is to provide a space for graffiti. And I think that there are a lot of arguments for and against that working, and probably a big discussion for the whole wider community, I suppose.
That's right. So I think AI, there's something wonderful in AI, but AI also raises a lot of questions. As you know, if we reduce the amount of labor in rural area, because we now have drones or solar-powered robots that can scan the farm 24/7 to spot spray weeds, it removes a lot of jobs. What is going to be the future of AI and building stronger communities?
Yeah, I think I was going to leave this for a little bit later on this episode, but let's have a chat about that now. Can you go a little bit more deeply into some of the potential problems with AI for human society and for plants and for the economy? I mean, what have we got to protect ourselves against? What have we got to be wary of?
That's a very good question, Daniel. I don't have the answer to that. I can only say that as wonderful as AI is, and we're now having predictive data, meaning that breeders, for instance, trying to make new variety of a crop, whereas before they had to test in the field for between 7 to 10 years to develop a new breed of canola or a new breed of wheat, they can now use data to do predictive analysis and shorten that time to 4 or 5 years, because they have enough data to predict which genes are going to be present in those plants and which genes aren't going to be there, and reduce the amount of time they've got to test those lines out in the field. Saying that, every time we make things go faster, we also reduce the amount of labor that's needed. And it also reduces the amount of time as human we have to communicate with each other. We already have seen that at supermarkets or fast food outlet, where now you don't even speak to a cashier. What is that going to mean for our rural communities and us as a species, which is so heavily reliant on communication with others for our well-being?
So well said. So, yeah, we do have to balance this. So the argument is that, you know, jobs don't get rid of, we don't get rid of jobs, but they just change. But I think that that is an overly simplistic way to look at it, because in agriculture, once a few people start buying all the land and then they have automation at their fingertips, there actually are jobs that are lost, and those people have to find jobs in a different industry.
That's right. And what is it going to mean also that all those big companies that are automated and the data they are collecting, or that it's already happening with farmers in their tractor cab, they already have their tractors, I believe, is sending data back to the company they've bought the tractor from. There's also ethic in that as to who owns the data, who has access to the data, and is that data presented in a format that's available to everyday people and that everybody can understand?
Absolutely. So what about any other ethical issues? Are there any others that you can think of?
That's my main concern, Daniel, is that as the bigger farm gets bigger, as whoever holds the data and the information has the power, in bracket, are we going to push out small farmholders? Are they going to be able to compete with those bigger enterprises? How do we make it fair game? And how do we maintain our social cohesion and strength in rural areas? Absolutely.
It really matters about the values that we're putting into these machines as well, because, are we maximizing production? Are we trying to reduce costs, or are we trying to grow healthy food? Like, what are the values that we're using this technology to facilitate?
Yes, we are. So we can already see, particularly in the horticultural industry, which is so heavily reliant on producing beautiful fruit and vegetables. Let's be honest, who wants to buy a weathered or a withered apple or a lettuce that doesn't look absolutely fresh? You know, we all tend to be attracted to the perfect vegetable and fruits. So to produce that sort of perfect food, there's quite a heavy reliance on production system that demand quite a bit of what's the correct word? They're going to be demanding a lot of machinery, a lot of polytunnels. So they need a lot of material. They also need quite a lot of pesticides, because as you can imagine, the horticultural product are quite appealing to a lot of pests and diseases. So having AI is already reducing how much fertilizer we use, how much pesticides and insecticides, which is wonderful. We now have to also make sure that the food we're producing is nutritious and that the AI we use is not going to require more more material than a conventional system would. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense to use in the program if it was making things less efficient. That's not what we're looking for out of our artificial intelligence, is it?
That's right. So if we need more input and material and iron and plastic to have a production system that uses AI, I think sustainably, we have to keep sustainability at the forefront of what we're doing.
That's right. So how can AI tools help us with our fresh produce storage? Because that's a really big issue in the supply chain, isn't it?
Absolutely. So AI now has the ability of finding the one rotten apple in the basket that's going to release ethylene gas and reduce the longevity of all those other apples that are being stored. It can also help you have fresh produce that have got an issue inside but look perfectly fine on the outside and detect those and remove them from the supply chain. It can also help us maintain the longevity of fresh produce for longer, but then come an ethical question of when fruit and vegetables are in storage for longer, we're using a lot of energy to achieve that. Is that a good thing? Or should we only consume produce that are in season.
Yeah, so that's a cultural shift, and that's not something that comes about easily. I think a lot of people are pushing for cultural shift on all different sides, and it's very hard to break through that noise. How do you think we can, how do we get it through to people to, eat seasonally? Because I'm guilty of it too. Like I'll eat broccoli through the summer, and I really shouldn't be doing that.
I think it starts with education. So it's easy for me to have that point of view because I know the industry, I know when things grow, but I can understand that this is not everyone's superpower. I think it should probably start at school, where kids should be taught, when are strawberries in season? How do we grow strawberries? When can you eat apples? When are apples in season? And I think the public, to their fair credit, are asking more and more about the origin of their produce, where they've been produced, and how they've been produced.
I definitely agree.
And hopefully price is a good indication of when things are in season. Just by paying attention to how much you pay for certain commodities is telling you whether or not they're in season in country.
So I think that AI can actually probably work against that, can't it? Would I be wrong in saying that AI will help make more affordable food out of season?
Absolutely, in a way. And perhaps the only concern I'd have with that, Daniel, would be the price of energy.
Right.
Because to keep apples and large quantities of apples or pears or whatever it is in big, large fridges is asking for a lot of energy to do that.
You're right. What are some weaknesses of AI that are not weaknesses within a human being?
The human brain has the ability to compile a lot of information to make an instant decision. So, for instance, when you breed for a new crop, the traditional way of doing that is to have many plots with different wheat, for instance, varieties, and we compare each of the plots. And so perhaps a plot that had a problem at sowing that may be slightly sparse, AI would maybe disregard that plot, saying that, well, it's not growing well. Whereas a human person will straight away understand that there was a problem at sowing and that perhaps those wheat plants are doing better than we think and that should be kept to the next stage of the breeding cycle.
So what are some ways that AI can outperform humans and some of our innate weaknesses?
I think we are not at the stage where we can completely rely on AI. We are, it's in its infancy. We've got some wonderful progress and we can really rely on AI for certain things, but we still need a human eye to look at the details and look at the data to then vote, yes, that's a good set of data. I trust the machine, or no, there is something there that's not quite right and we should investigate.
Mm-hmm. Surely, though, there must be something that AI can do that humans can't do, whether that's being able to detect minute differences between color in a leaf to determine chlorophyll. Would that be something that AI could outperform humans with?
Oh, absolutely. Level of gas, level of infection in a in a crop, detecting differences in that greenness could then tell you across a whole field where there's a deficiency, for instance. And so AI could then send a drone to spot spray and add the fertilizer precisely where it's needed in that field. A human eye cannot do that.
So let's move on now to broadacre cropping. We talked about satellite imaging. Are there any other AI technologies that can assist with broadacre cropping?
Absolutely. We're now talking about using drones to spray fertilizer or herbicide or insecticide precisely where the infection is. removing the need for a tractor, removing the need for fuel.
So you can use the drones to exactly detect where a problem is. And then I suppose it's up to a human then to go and amend that problem, because we don't yet have access to an AI program that can detect a problem and then fix it up in a broad acre sense. Or am I wrong about that?
I would believe that in some research settings, large company would already have the technology. Whether they have released and that technology is reliable enough, I would not know, Daniel.
So I'd urge our listeners to go and listen to episode 129, Drones in Ag and Hort, with Fiona Lake, who is a drone expert in Australia. That was a great episode. She had a lot to say about, you know, how drones can assist, especially in the broad acre sense of horticulture.
Mm. You can also use the drones to check on stock. So the farmer could be at home having a cup of coffee, sending the drone to inspect the paddock and the flock. Mm. Yes.
While they're sitting at home watching sunrise or whatever. No, just joking. They're probably in the shed tinkering with the tractor or doing something else.
That's right. They could still be at the breakfast table getting their kids ready to school and just looking at their phone for what that particular mob of sheep is doing.
Hmm. So are there any other technologies that we've neglected to talk about so far that you've had experience with?
That's probably the main one I have. I think now most farmers are familiar with auto steering on the tractors.
Mm.
There's now great advances with satellite imaging and storage in horticulture. Orchard, I think people are very curious also about being able to grow fruit and vegetables indoor or along buildings.
Mm.
And that also requires a lot of artificial intelligence.
So I was hoping to talk about ChatGPT. I don't know how much experience you've had with that program orally.
I did use the link that you've sent me, and it was quite interesting and intriguing. I think it's wonderful, as it gives you quite, it's like it gives you the title of a chapter.
Yeah. It gives you a first draft or an outline.
An outline. That's exactly right. Mm. And then it's up to you to really push through and research each of the topics mentioned by the AI to further your knowledge.
That's a great way to put it. So what it is it's a language model chatbot. So it's basically, you just Google search ChatGPT. Anybody can use it for free. I know that it's pretty full up at the moment, so you may not actually get access to it. But I really like it for what we said. It's about outline. So it has access to a whole heap of information from before 2021, including all of Wikipedia and a bunch of other stuff. Like, so much data went into it. But the problem with it is that sometimes it'll tell you completely the wrong information, complete misinformation, and it'll do it so confidently that it'll just trick you. So, for example, I tried to get it to figure out some dates, like what's the difference in time between this time and this time. Mm-hmm. And it was said something like, that is 5 years and 17 months, which is 5 years and 5 months. No, that's not what that is at all. That would be 6 years and 5 months. So it'll just tell you the exact wrong information very confidently. But what it is really good at is it's good at giving you ideas you didn't have before. So I've done stuff like, give me an integrated pest management program for thrips on roses. And then it'll just spit out all these ideas, and then you can just be like, great, go from there, research this bit further. This is something I already knew, but I just forgot that I knew that. And then you can take it even further by saying stuff like, please give me more ideas that are uncommon and out of the box. And it'll spit stuff out at you like reflective mulch and just stuff that you may not have thought of before. Mm. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of this program. It is free. You can also pay for it. But it is an absolute game changer, and I can't wait to see what applications are built off the back of this GPT technology.
That's right. No. I think you're onto something there. When you research a topic or whatever it is you want to learn, it's always very important to look for the other side and to have the ability to take on advice or look at point of view that may not agree, you may not agree with.
I could not agree more. That's why I think a lot of people are afraid of this new technology, because they think it's just going to go away if they ignore it. But I don't think that this technology is going away. We've let the genie out of the bottle now, so we may as well get to know it. Yeah, I think we've got to get to know it. One other thing I'd like to point out with this GPT technology, with the ChatGPT bot, is that you can actually get a Google Chrome extension called WebChatGPT, and that allows ChatGPT to be connected to the internet. So you can actually be like, find me 6 resources that indicate that glyphosate is safe to use, then please find me 6 scientific studies that say that glyphosate is unsafe to use. And it'll give you all these links to these scientific studies. You can go through and read the scientific studies itself. Or you can be like, what are the connections between this topic and this topic? Yeah. So you can use it to connect ideas. There's just so much that you can do with this technology. And it's really something that you have to test out for yourself and see how it applies to your business. But I reckon this one's a game changer for sure for any business, really.
So I think as much information as you can find, and that's a very good example you gave. There's a lot of issue with glyphosate, and unfortunately, glyphosate, we wouldn't have the level of production in agriculture we have in the current way we're farming without glyphosate.
Yeah.
And so, but you're absolutely right. Having to know the pros and cons gives you a much better ability to make the right decision for you.
Absolutely agree, Aurelie. So what about any other technologies? Like, I've already asked you this, but is there anything else that comes off the back of your head in terms of like how horticulturists, landscapers, arborists, farmers, anybody who works with plants professionally can use AI technology to just be better at their job, to become, you know, more than one person, to be able to have the output of, you know, multiple people?
That's right. So what's happening now is, for instance, if you look at an orchard and the person has 50 trees, you can use AI, whether with imaging or drone, to look at every tree and barcode every single tree and look at their performance. You can then implement management practices, particularly if you get a drone to spray or deliver fertilizer, to have the exact fertilizer regime that's needed for each of the trees to be producing as best they can. So before, we just had a blanket approach. You get the tractor in, you'd spray all of those trees with the same fertilizer rate. And now we've realized with AI, we can tailor that application to the unit level.
Wow.
And in the broadacre field, it's exactly the same. You may have subtle soil constraints, or perhaps this used to be a pasture and that's where you always drop the bales of hay and that changed the soil profile for that area. You can now send a drone, or you can use imaging to understand by the square meter how your field is doing and address those issues precisely. So I think this is going to be a game changer for how much food we can produce out of every square meter. And it's the same with parks and garden. They can now probably be able to predict the longevity of trees in the park and have the ability to anticipate planting based on what they know about each tree. So that you constantly, let's say, have, because I know in the park, for instance, you're trying to have a cohort of trees at different stage of their life. So as certain tree mature or become too old, you already have the next generation coming up. Otherwise, you'd only have very old tree or very young tree and little shade in that park.
So, Aurelie, we've come to the end of the episode. And I always like to ask guests one final question. It doesn't have to be on topic. It can be about anything you'd like. Is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about?
Yes. I think what I'm working on and what's very exciting is we are now looking at plants in a different light. We're realizing how important the relationship they have with the soil microorganisms. We now know that plants communicate through electric signals and chemical signals with the microorganisms in the soil around them to ask for help. So if a plant is stressed and is being attacked by insects, we know now, thanks to AI and the progress of science, that that plant is releasing chemicals and compounds to the soils to ask for those microorganisms, i.e. bacteria and fungi, to come to the rescue and help the plant uptake the nutrient it needs to fight off that insect.
Astounding. I think that there was also a new study that said that seems to say that plants also emit a sound when they're being attacked by a pest or a disease, which is fascinating as well, like a clicking sound.
That's right. So it's just really interesting for us that we are not just looking at as plants, which are a basic part of life on Earth, as just something that grows out of the ground. We're now having a closer relationship with the organisms around us and a better appreciation for their complexity. And I think that's a really, philosophically and ethically, it's a very good thing.
Couldn't agree more, Aurelie. I really enjoyed this chat. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Daniel. Thanks for having me on the talk.
ChatGPT is an entry-level AI chatbot that's available to everybody for free. While the rest of our culture is worrying about students using it to cheat on essays, you can take advantage of it to help in the brainstorming phase of your work, like the IPM program example I gave earlier. I've been playing with it over the last few months and I've learnt a few tips and tricks. I've dropped a bunch of ideas to help you use it with writing job descriptions, which you can find by searching hashtag HeyChatGPT on LinkedIn. As always, follow the podcast on your favourite listening app, check me out on Twitter at PlantsGrowHere, and search for Daniel Fuller on LinkedIn. Post your resume on hortpeople.com for free, search for jobs, or use this industry-based job board for your recruitment needs.